Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide, as well as sign up to the basketball pick'ems thingy. I know nothing about basketball. I was talking to Sam Brown this week because I don't sync up when I watch AEW shows with the American one. I'd like to stay up and be messaging the other host. Me and Sam do not sync up quite often. So more often than not, generally the night before Revolution, it was lovely just to get a message from that Sam, be like, when are you planning to watch it? So we can sync up and we can watch it. The curse for not being American. But anyway, one of the things I was just saying in there is like, I know rappers about as well as I know NASCAR drivers, and I've got to insert basketball in there too. There's a lot of American culture which does not escape the American ball and into my brain. So just, I know nothing about basketball, but I've been told to plug it, so I'm plugging it hard. Join the basketball pick'ems thing. And my name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of the company that doesn't have any politics in its programming, yet here I am for the second week in a row, and I've got notes on politics in the programming. It's like, oh my god, who could have seen this coming? I'm not talking about like, oh, we could see it through the narrative. I mean, like, just blatant shit here, which is blatantly political. There is no other way to spin this. But this week I have got a SmackDown, which is 2 hours on Netflix for me and on USA for them. And I've got a Netflix special where I watch the edited down version, so I haven't got any like, European bonuses this week. I think it was 1 hour 48 was the Raw that I watched. Yeah, suck it, the people that like a 3 hour show or 2.5 hour show. 1 hour 48. It's just a breeze to get through in comparison. But first, we've got SmackDown. It's a much shorter week this week. Last week was Elimination Chamber with all of that stuff to talk about. This week, it's a much, much shorter week. So let's just jump on now and do it. Let's jump to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the location of last year's WrestleMania and the Super Bowl winners. I know about that. I'm not completely oblivious to all America sports. But let's jump on over to a SmackDown that actually felt like a WrestleMania road affair. It's like, oh, okay, thank God we're past the era of just not a lot of stuff happening. at least the segments now, we're driving towards WrestleMania. We're on that road. Yeah, so let's jump on over.
John, here I am holding this championship. It is not heavy enough. Here I am holding this championship as I have done for the last 300 and something days. John, I know you're watching. I know that you think that your successor had to look like you, had to talk like you, had to be like you, had to live like you. Well, the next one doesn't look like the last one, John, and you are convinced that you are the last of your kind. You are not. I am standing right here. I am holding this above my head as if it weighs nothing. And at WrestleMania 41, I will do the same. John Cena, clearly you want some. Come and get some.
That's right, we're starting off with Cody Rhodes and the boo-boo on his face, making his first appearance since Elimination Chamber, where he got beaten up by the evil three, Travis Scott, John Cena, and The Rock. Yes, Travis Scott, damn you! Or John Cena, I guess that he's going to be the actual of Man of Ire. I'm not expecting Travis Scott to get his comeuppance, like, give me Cody versus Travis. I want to see him take a crossroads. It's not going to happen. But Cody getting beaten up by his own Rolex that he's still wearing the wound to prove it. The lad just stood there for a moment, soaking in the adoration from the crowd, letting the camera get a good look at the boo-boo over his left eye. Playing the role of the John Cena fan, why did their hero give up? There is no justification for you, John Cena. Happy times remembering the Philly fans getting behind him over a decade ago, as well as last year's WrestleMania. Holding up the title and saying, I'm holding this above my head as if it weighs nothing. Referencing the storyline of the weight of the title and being that champion getting to Cody, this is a direct response to that. And Barrett on commentary talking about standing up to the most corrupt power, no matter the consequences. Like, how did my European seep through onto my definitely American right-leaning WWE programming? How did that get through? On Raw, old Coaster killed more time without his foes present. Next week's Raw will be recorded from Belgium, and that's where we'll be getting our first heel Cena look. And on the feed that I got for the Raw show, they muted the word goddamn because US sponsors are just still of the old world and make... If you can say shit, then you can say every other word that's technically lower down the list of what counts as a swear. You got the, you're going to make a tier system with the C word being top. And for over here in the UK, I guess. Tangent. It's because I talked about it last week. It does what was allowed in movies. I'm not actually checked for TV. Cody Rhodes promising to beat his own hero and not allow Cena to reach title number 17. I'm the captain now, John. And that's how his week ended on Monday Night Raw. Did a pretty good job of showing where Cody Rhodes' character is at after the Elimination Chamber and set us up perfectly fine for Belgium. I feel like the reception of how it goes in Belgium is almost a tell-all bit. I was a little bit worried about them stretching it out. After the Elimination Chamber, where I found out they weren't going to be on it for 2 weeks, I was like, oh, that's maybe a momentum problem. When I learned that news, I didn't know that this week's Raw was going to be from Madison Square Garden, so they could just pack the card with stuff, meaning, like, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. You have a stacked card, so people aren't going to be too worried about this specific storyline carrying on. And I feel like long-term as well, once you've had the big card of Madison Square Garden, from this point on, it kind of just has to be focused. It really does have to just keep building it. Last year, you could have people not there because you got the rest of the bloodline. I made this point last week, but this week, both lads who were the key players aren't going to be there, so Curtis is going to come out and cut a promo. And he maybe got a little bit of a worry of us entering the zone that we've entered already with, like, Charlotte and Tiffany Stratton and Gunther and Jey Uso. And just kind of create a scenario for the competitor to come and run out and just interfere, or to come out and save somebody to do a brawl. And Gunther Jey Uso, it's been that week after week after week. And then I saw it on this week's SmackDown with Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair attacking after the bells. You create a reason for the challenger or champion to run on out and do an attack. And it's just that rinse and repeat. So I'm already seeing it in two feuds. I'm already at that. And the repetition for the Cody thing could just be him coming out doing a promo, because what else is he going to do? But those things can still be of quality. And I felt like both of the promos here were of a decent enough quality and did a good job. Because it was fine. Raw was stacked. It was a big Madison Square Garden show. Cody came out and did a quick thing. Like, it was all right. It was fine. And this was like the first time afterwards, so of course you're interested in this one as well. But it was a SmackDown that felt like it was building properly to something. It wasn't just a case of you got the Cody voting the main thing and then it's just a load of bleh. But no, it felt like there was a lot of focus in terms of setting things up, which is the benefit of it being like one that final sprint now. We're going right in there. So the first of those was Randy Pandy. Randy Pandy returns and kicked off Smackers. And because he was the first lad out on the show, you know that the show will be 10 minutes deep before we get to it. Before we get anything of real content. Unless you really just want to absorb Randy Orton's music and watch him pose for a bit and get his applause from the crowd. Like, hey, these shows are long. Any time to skip helps. Like, immediately, my SmackDown, well, bang, 10 minutes gone. It's now a 1 hour 50 show. Like, oh, there we go. Kicking off with a little rant on John Cena, a wee little gay joke calling John Cena rock's bottom, before swiftly moving on serious to Kevin Owens. Randy gave us a full history lesson building up KO's resume too, but finally flowing to the point, Kevin Owens, you pissed me off. Setting the scene for WrestleMania, the voices are talking to him again, and at Elimination Chamber, they were telling him to kick Kevin Owens in the head. Randy promised to punt the Canadian in Las Vegas, and pose. Similar kind of structure to the Cody Rhodes promo. You come out, you gloat with the crowd for a bit, you go all, try to crack a little joke, and then you move on to the actual storyline, like, purpose of it. The thing it really worked for was building that world where everybody's reacting to it, especially people who know John Cena a lot more. They are reacting to his turn. It's not just a thing that's happened in the bubble. Like, everyone is reacting to this, and as they should be, everybody should be reacting to it. And if Randy Orton's of a previous era, I guess it fits his character to make that kind of joke. Does that count? Both the jokes he made on there was like, technically I believe your character would make those jokes. It doesn't mean you should, but you know, WWE are definitely more leaning a certain way. But we'll get to that part when we get to Raw. Weirdly, SmackDown's more liberal, ironically. Even though I'm just talking about them making a gay joke, they had Cody Rhodes make a very liberal statement about taking down the corrupt power. It's like, wait a second. Bianca Belair and Naomi. Both lasses all serious, dressed in New Zealand all black. I have no idea how many of my predominantly American audience will get that. But there you go for my Kiwis and Aussies. Bianca came out first and set the table, playing the I know she didn't beats for the crowd to react to, getting them primed for the actual conversation, which flowed in a way I kind of wasn't expecting in terms of like how it was performed. Naomi on out with the this isn't what it looks like, you need to listen to me. That's why I say it's not in terms of what they're saying that's anything original, it's how it was done. Going full distraction and forcing Belair to focus things up on Cargill. Naomi finally got her airtime to say how she really feels about Jade, then building up and amping up and arguing and talking over each other, full dramatic for the give me a yes or no ultimatum for Naomi to tell her if she attacked Jade or not. Full tears from both women for the admission, Bianca out and using it for Naomi to amp herself up into saying the bitch word. I was a little worried they were pushing Jade villain in full soap opera, but it's not what it looks like. It's like, Cargill then arrived in her full white bodysuit with decorative blood splatter. Like, sometimes the character intent isn't so subtle. Straddling on out and clobbering Naomi over inside with Bianca's kind of blessing. It's like, sure. Naomi didn't help herself out in that segment. I'm perfectly fine with this just looking like it is. Like, that's absolutely fine. I don't need this to have soap opera twists and things. I don't need it for Jay to eventually be actually painted the baddie, and then you get your emotional welcoming back for Bianca and Naomi down the line. I don't need it. For me, this is absolutely fine. If Jade's the superstar you want to build, as much as I love Jade as a heel, I feel like in WWE it can really work. Almost a similar note with Cody Rhodes, like all of the notes, Cody Rhodes and AEW in terms of just fans starting to be able to read some of the faintness, whatever, all of those notes work in WWE. And they did a really good job of playing to Jade's strengths in AEW. But in the negative, for me, they're all positives in WWE. The way that they like their characters to be, the way that they like the performers to do, I feel like they're mostly positives. So I can definitely see the more superhero aspects of Jade Cargill really, really working. They're just not really They've lent into them in like the tag team scene, but now that we're properly getting a full singles push, I just say lean into that stuff. You don't need to turn a villain. Keep a babyface. See if Naomi can do these different chops. And the main event was for the United States Championship, Shinsuke Nakamura versus LA Knight. Always in favour of the title match to main event. They're all shows building the stories and propping up characters anyway, so why not add prestige to a championship by making it feel that bit more important? I mean, that's more of a little rant from the previous era leftover. It's like, it's not really appropriate to this era because they do main event titles. These titles all the time. They even main evented with the women's tag team titles a couple of weeks ago. Whenever I hear Naka's new theme, I remember the first post on Blue Sky I saw about it, which said, "Can you pop your booty to Shinsuke Nakamura's new theme? Yes. Yes, you can." The bar to which WWE themes are to be measured by. A sure better measurement than if it positively adds to the character. Like, who cares? It's a booty popper. After all the pomp and circumstance, we've got 8 minutes till we're off air. No time to faff. Just feckin' get to it, chaps. So, how does my Shinsuke won't be on the WrestleMania card call that I've been doing each week and I've been strongly pushed, so probably it's like, it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good. A very standard, perfectly fine, not particularly memorable telly title belt. Your slow pace with the occasional explosive beat, but not in a Naito way, more in your WWE showman way. Do a move. Ta-da! Walk about, punch. Do a move. Ta-da! It's just a very slow, ploddy pace. You kick it up a bit for the final flow, but yeah, you don't. It's not that. It's nowhere near those Naito levels of explosions. Schmoz of an ending with a chair, missed to Ref Charles' face, and Knight snatching his title back with a BFT to the chair in reversal. Second referee ran on down. 2009 TNA's Rudy Charles counting the three for Knight's WrestleMania to actually get going. The long Nakamura sidetrack over, which probably didn't help the samurai character either, given the expectation that he was more of an obstacle for LA to overcome rather than anything important. And now that we're in WrestleMania season, brush to the side, back to the main focus, guys. Like, he gave an obstacle for LA Knight, but I was never really super invested in the Nakamura character because it just felt like a temporary hurdle and now he's been overcome. I doubt there's going to be anything for him, but I don't know what your plans are for Shinsuke, if you have any at all. LA Knight's the focus. He was the hurdle for LA Knight to overcome. He's the star. He gets the WrestleMania match. I don't really have many. No, you know how I feel about these matches. It's absolutely fine. Completely unmemorable. I will not be able to remember this match. Because I will, whenever I try and remember this match, I already know. I'm going to picture the match when Shinsuke won at War Games. I'm not going to be able to remember this match. Because I'll just picture that. This was just, the entire feud is already just shrank down to one moment that I've completely forgotten about everything else that happened. But we'll see what LA Knight is now doing at WrestleMania. That takes me to the other notes. Drew McIntyre, he faced Jimmy Uso again, hence why it's in the other notes. He immediately attacked Damian Priest on sight upon entering the building, and then a surprise attack on the ramp in retaliation after the match, with the Scott getting his clobbering victory over Jimmy Uso, but then he got attacked by Damian Priest afterwards. Tiffany faced Piper Niven, and Chelsea Green faced Mia Yim. The two were set up together in a backstage segment with Nick Aldis. Stratton was attacked by Charlotte Flair after the bell. How very Gunther Uso. Just the reason for the match was to give an excuse for Tiffany Stratton to get attacked by Charlotte Flair. Just carbon copy of what we're getting over on Raw with Gunther Uso. Like, just they've got nothing. It just absolutely screamed throughout that point with two of the feuds. Both Royal Rumble winners, and they've got nothing. It's just the same stuff repeated. Chelsea and Mia was just a bit of no DQ plunder fun, but Chelsea Green's Mick Foley outfit was great, especially given her character's the furthest thing from hardcore. But this was a staging for Kaylee Ray to make her Smackers debut as Chelsea's new Scottish secret, Hervis. I mean, Her Majesty's Secret Service is already the name. You don't need to feminize it. It's already feminine. You can't turn down a good pun, though. I feel like, as a British person, I do have to recognise the usage of a good pun. The story of the tag division is that it's a chaotic mess of interferences and contender confusion. Barrett commentary told the tale of five teams that Aldis is trying to keep all appeased. But here we got a number one contender triple threat. Motor City Machine Guns faced Los Garza and Pretty Deadly. Yes, boys! Won in the end, but we're hurtling towards that WrestleMania multi-tag. Later in the show, DIY were interviewed by Saxton. Apparently the tag division is on fire. Next week they face Pretty Deadly in Barcelona. Yes, that's right, Smackers is SN España for their WrestleMania Road Euro Tour. And Monday Night Raw is in Belgium. Big boy bash between Braun and Solo. The tall charging man actually set to get the best of Sikoa until a Tama Tonga interference after the successful power slam. But it set the Jacob Fatu entrance up for the Strowman stare down. So that crowd disappointment didn't last long at all, because it's time for the big lad brawl. Through the crowd and to the big boxers, poor Jacob chokeslammed through tables. They're gonna have a WrestleMania just big boy big boy brawl moment. Mano and Miz with Aldis, and in walks Randy Orton for his second joke of the night. Fortnite's for kids. I was playing Elden Ring. Just talking about Meadow Hazel riffing off of Randy Orton at home just playing Fortnite. What have you been doing, just playing Fortnite? No, I was playing Elden Ring. I'd set up a match between he and Hayes next week. And I fully believe, you know what, I can fully believe that that's what Randy Orton did. He made two jokes and both of them were like, you know what, I believe your character would say those things. I fully believe it. But yeah, SmackDown, it actually built to stuff. And obviously, as you saw there, like, I'm not all singing and glowing about how they did it and the flow of the show, but it was all purposeful and building to something. There wasn't really any like faff or wasted segments. Sure, I found some of it a bit lazy. Like what they're doing with Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton. Both were Rumble winners and we're both in that situation, are we? But everything else set up things absolutely fine. I'll talk a little bit more about Bianca Belair because we've got her segment to come to on Monday Night Raw as well. So let's jump on over. We've got the big Madison Square Garden show live on Netflix with our big steel cage main event over in New York, New York. It's Monday Night Raw.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them.
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell.
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
I'm not calling Nostradamus. The shows have been doing everything they can to tell you Roman Reigns was showing up here without directly telling you. If I was like a scammer report site type of thing, pure clickbait stuff or whatever, I could have gone, oh, there's reports going around that Roman Reigns is going to return next week. It's like, it's not reports, they're telling you. It's one of these where you can pick it up by just watching the show. Also, with this steel cage match, watching this after the violence of Fletcher versus Ospreay was quite the whiplash. Like, just difficult to feel anything in comparison. An unmatchable shadow. A match that was so very WWE. Kicking out of finishers, pausing for dialogue, moments to pop for, but aside from one three-minute section, I wasn't having any emotional reaction related to the characters. That's the AEW magic, an ability to actually make you feel rather than just excitedly pop and cheer. Both have their place, like, don't get me wrong, but the AEW method bloody well casts a much more impactful shadow. Case in point, WWE's cage was a setup for an interference angle. The cage match itself isn't even a talking point going forward, it's just a staging. Whilst in AEW, it was the close, as in this is the end of it, so it's going to be super violent because it is the end of this violent chapter. Kind of like the Hell in a Cell was used for CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. But it was just very strange watching. AEWs have this ability, they emotionally draw you in, but then it's also that, like, a fear feeling as well. Like, where you go, oh no, type of thing. You never get that in WWE, even when there was all the blood in the Hell in a Cell match. That match went way further than expecting, but I still never left that popping for the moments type of situation. Even though I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was awesome. Just comparatively talking about both companies too violent in a cage style matches. AEW just have an amazing ability, and I'll always talk about the Hangman Page swerve match when Hangman Page turns around and the crowd just, like, an intake of breath go that's a gut reaction. It's like, oh, that will never happen in you cannot do it. It's such an amazing reaction, especially with Hangman Page playing off that, realizing that he's become the monster. Oh, it's so good. It's so damn good. So my point is, it's a very, very high bar, and in WWE I don't expect them to hit that sort of thing, mostly just because I know what the play, especially on a telly show. Like, you go into this knowing, it's like, okay, they've all already told me that Roman Reigns is going to be coming here. They've done everything they can to tell me without telling me, so I already know this is just a staging for that. But they let Seth Rollins and CM Punk kind of just get out their anger with each other. But I feel like, for me, there was a 3-minute period which, like, really worked, and it came after the big spot of the match with CM Punk climbed up high. We'd just seen his elbow drop fail to score a pinfall, so someone taking a jump from a higher level, like a clear next level escalation. We got a fancy drone shot as the two traded blows atop the cage. Again, WWE is all about spectacle, and I all for the kind of 360 style of production you can do with a drone. Seth sliding down to the top rope and resulting in a superplex. The crowd amped and cheered loud from that point on, fully there for every beat, especially with Rollins countering the GTS into an STF and shouting, "Go to sleep!" And for me, that was the absolute best portion of the match. You got the crowd really loud after the big superplex, then you've in almost full character mode doing the submission stuff, but then the ending fell into your finisher kickout. It's like, oh, they had such a strong few minutes after the superplex before it, and then just into finisher kickout stuff. It's like, oh, it's so WWE. And that's what I mean by talking about with Ospreay Fletcher. They're not hitting signature moves. They're trying to hurt each other. It creates such a stronger emotional reaction. Here it just, yeah, it felt like your typical WWE style in that way. This is awesome after the second GTS failed to keep Sethi Boo down, almost proving my point. They were excited and having a good time. Like, you compare that to the emotional beats of what we watched Saturday. One of the crowd chanting, this is awesome, this is really excited, we're having a great time. The other one, I was just character-wise, emotionally invested in what they were doing. And I'd always take the second one. Even though the fact they're chanting, this is awesome, we're having a great time, this was a fun match. If you want fun and exciting wrestling, this was your thing. They hit loads of finishes and they were loads of kickouts, but it's not like going to emotionally pull me in. Another kickout after Punk did his own stomp, finisher stealing side ass, then another WWE run. Punk's opportunity to escape the cage turned down and right into his own near loss after a stolen finisher. Seth finally hit the Brett's rope super stomp and just stared at him. That's when we got our close-up camera on Rollins' mug as the crowd popped loud for the returning original tribal chief. Superman punches and stomps from Reigns to Rollins in rumble receipt. Seth's head draped on the steel steps, but a wall of suits held him off. That's when old Roman saw Paul Heyman helping Punk in the ring. No similar kinship, as the Chicago man had his own rumble receipt too, going off air after a spear and the one raised high. The crowd popping loud for the return of Roman Reigns, taking us straight into this triple threat match. I felt like it mirrored what happened at the Royal Rumble really well. This is an entire stage for Roman Reigns to make his big return and then can go forwards afterwards. It does raise that question of, might as well have been a singles match because it's just a staging for a return anyway. But it's Madison Square Garden. Throughout the show, they were able to show the previous cage matches in Madison Square Garden, tying into history. The different cage matches they showed from the 80s, they're able to reference that Seth Rollins was in the last steel cage match, Madison Square Garden match 10 years ago. So there's all of those, like, different reasons to include it, even if, like, storyline wise It's nothing. It somewhat devours Steel Cage match because it doesn't feel like any form of feud ender. They've brought that back, that feeling for the Hell in a Cell, like CM Punk, Drew McIntyre did absolute wonders of revitalising that after it was killed during the later Vince years. My review kind of this is it just depends what you want from it. You kind of go in knowing what to expect in a way. Like, you know it's not going to hit the just sheer levels emotionally that we were taken to with Fletcher Ospreay. But it was, you know, you got lots of kickouts and finishes, and so it is like fast-paced and exciting. There's a lot going on, and then Roman Reigns makes his return, and that's the big moment. There's a lot of stuff happening, in a way. A lot of stuff happening, which you can get very excited about. But do I emotionally feel things as I watch it? No. And I got that this weekend. That's why it's shining. It's that whiplash that I get from Wrestle Kingdom as well. Just that the way that the shows make you actually feel something are just entirely different. And then, yeah, you watch AEW especially, and they've got such an amazing ability to do that to you. Then I watch this, and it's like, no, yeah, it's entertaining. It's my pop to my Chardonnay I got the weekend. That's a bit much. For me, for Raw this week, I watched the trimmed down 1 hour, 48 minute version, which if you're going to watch Raw, I highly recommend you watch this version. So much easier to watch. I didn't get burned out or tired. A promo video played for CM Punk's Seth Rollins, and I actually watched it without going, oh, I can skip this, because the show was 1 hour, 48 minutes. It wasn't a full hour longer. I was like, you know what? I've got time. I don't need to find as much room to skip. I can just digest the show. But don't worry, that optimism was squashed upon them hyping Andrew Saltz's comedy show with him on the front row. If you didn't know, he's the guy who told the joke in quotation marks about Puerto Rico being trash at the Madison Square Garden essential Nazi rally with Trump there. But WWE doesn't have any political notes on their shows. Yet here we are, 2 weeks in a row, with me making that gag about WWE not having any political notes on their shows whilst doing an obvious political note. It's like, you can't bring out Andrew Saltz in Madison Square Garden, the exact same building he made that joke in quotation marks, and then be able to say, oh, we don't have anything political on our shows. How is that not political? In the slightest. He gets in the ring with AJ Styles and the transphobe. Like, sure, it's three Republicans having a time together, but like, it's just like, what are we doing here? It's just, you cannot. It's just impossible for that to just not be some form of political note. I mean, we all knew it was bullshit when he said it. It's not going to get called out in a scrum or anything. They're not really things. They've successfully made them a weird PR thing. I've stopped watching them because I don't expect there to be anything, and I follow enough people on Blue Sky that if something of note happens, I will see it. Bix will talk about it. Brandon Thurston will talk about it. Like, I follow the people where, if something happens, I'll see it. I mean, also, Social Suplex Discord. Go join that to see normal fans talking a lot more normally. Later in the show, the transfer did riff with Saltz as well, with Saltz taking the character of the New York fan. The answer is yes, the crowd did initially boo him. So even in New York, the place that the previous Madison Square Garden event took place. But you say things like CM Punk and AJ Styles are your wrestlers that you like and that you've turned up for. And wrestling crowds are easy to sway. You say names or they'll pop for the names. It felt like you were getting a bit of crowd sweetening when he was posing up on the ropes. The reason I felt that is because they showed Macaulay Culkin later, and that's a pop. That's an actual cheer. Wrestling crowds, they can be a bit easy to sway if you just say the name of a person they like. Unless you're Hulk Hogan. Wrestling fans are banded in fuck Hulk Hogan. The other note I want to talk about is Io Sky, Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair. Michael Cole was in the ring to interview Io, giving the crowd the chance to chant for her win before the other lasses came out to set up WrestleMania. Bianca out next to directly set up the champion and already established number one contender. Then finally, Ripley interfered to have her go at the lass that distracted her last week. The two speaking over each other are very reminiscent of the segment on Smackers, before the new champion gave them both a strong slap. Io Sky's had enough of being disrespected, called Cole back on commentary, so they can stall out making the triple threat a little longer. We've basically got it set up. Not a long segment at all, getting through it quickly and ending with Io charging out the ring as they needed to get to that main event. But it was just like a somewhat reflection of what happened with the Naomi segment, and it's where I want to talk about the two in that kind of together, where they in both segments had the two women escalate into bickering over each other until something kind of stopped them. It made sense on SmackDown because they were building to a big emotional beat, so that showed that they were not emotionally controlling themselves in the moment. Liked it. Here, I'm not quite... It doesn't quite work for me just because of what I know for Rhea Ripley's character. This doesn't make her feel like that strong, dominant, mammy character that we've all come to love. That character, in terms of what happened last week, doesn't come out bickering the next week. It's somewhat like a little shift in the character a bit. It makes sense in terms of what they're setting up to try and get to the triple threat. I don't know if I had a bit of a nerdy reaction going, doesn't particularly feel true to the character. Like, I guess the character's had a shift. You're telling that story of her just being a bit paranoid after leaving Judgment Day, not just being anywhere near as confident. And this would show being a bit more emotionally unstable and not as sure as yourself. But for me, the baby character works the best when she's the overconfident, sure of herself, kind of a dickhead, like an Aussie dickhead. Like, it works really well for her. Just thought I'd point out that both women's segments that they're built pretty big this week, both had them escalating into bickering over each other. So maybe keep an eye on it to see if any of these notes continue. And that takes me to the other notes. Jey Uso opened the show beating Grayson Waller. I genuinely only paid half attention, with my focus taken up on writing my notes for how I wanted to word my notes on shorts. Madison Square Garden got to yeet. I can't lie, Uso really works as a show opening lad to awaken the crowd. Gunther choked his number one contender out afterwards. Almost feels like this match is destined to open night one. Prove me wrong, WWE. Make it feel like a bigger deal. God, New Day's new theme is still such a disappointing generic track. They tornado tagged against Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee, remember him. Definitely not Chad Gable in a lucha mask interfered and cost the LWO. Later in the show, as Chad was arguing with Kathy Kelly about it being a different lad in the same outfit, a different lad in the same outfit and mask got escorted out by security. Almost screams of an angle that's just inserting weird twists just because. I don't know where this is going. It screams something where the payoff can't be good. But, you know, I'm happy to be wrong. I'm happy to this to actually be working, but it's almost screaming like the Eric Rowan reveal back for Who Attacked Roman Reigns. It's like, no. Let's, you know, I'm getting those vibes. You can always prove me wrong. The Judgment Day backstage set up their matches, Raquel versus Bayley this week and Finn Balor versus Bron Breakker for the IC title next week, telling a tale of Dom faking being a good friend, because he knows Bron will just batter Balor like a Glaswegian. The women's match giving us something for Bayley to do with the tag lasses for WrestleMania as well. Finally, around ringside, celebrities of Netflix shows. So the word celebrity is doing a lot of legwork. And like I said earlier, contrasting the fascist comedian with what an actual cheer sounds like with Macaulay Culkin. It's like, yes, he didn't need to turn the crowd up for that one. if anything, he needed to turn it down a little. Wrestling fans love Macaulay Culkin. But anyway, that's the end of this week. Just a building blocks show. The reverberations from Elimination Chamber were really last week, whilst this was more giving us the after effects of that and then setting us towards WrestleMania. Just focusing in on what the show's going to actually shape up as outside of just the big matches. Obviously, there were big matches to set up. We've basically got them, like the triple threat and whatever, but they haven't all been officially announced. You kind of see where the card is shaping up. Like, you got the Trump supporters facing each other in AJ Styles, and they've got their match over there. You've got the triple threat for the women's title on Raw, and then you've got triple threat as well for Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Punk. Just the rest of the card is starting to take shape. I can't say that this Raw was just another skippable one, because it totally wasn't. They stacked the card. They did all this stuff. Like, it's absolutely fine. And next week is from Europe. So my little worry of, would we see a little bit of a stagnation? It's a little bit of momentum kind of a lull as we get to WrestleMania. But it feels like they're varying the shows quite a lot. As said, like, last week was the reverberation episodes. This week you got the big special with the Madison Square Garden show, and then we're in Europe. So immediately, like, week after week, all three of them, they've got this different vibe about them. And then we've got the kind of final countdown of the last 3 or 4 weeks until we're actually at WrestleMania. So yeah, next week's show, it's Europe time, baby. So I get to report shows from my places of my people over here in the European lands, the European mainland. I will be back this time next week to cover the European shows from Barcelona and from Brussels in Belgium. With that, I say thank you for listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never taken for granted. Even if you don't normally listen to my show and you normally listen to any of the other shows here on Social Suplex, it means a lot to all of us. Please do check out all of the other shows. And I'll be back this time next week to talk about Europe and all that stuff. The English Eurovision song is out as well. It's, you know, we don't want to host. it's one of those songs. It's like, you know what? It's fine that the song is absolutely fine, because we don't want to win. we don't want to host Eurovision again. No, it's too soon. So anyway, I'll be back next week to talk about the Euro shows. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.